Hey guys, I'm Chantel.
And I'm Chris.
And this is
Forgotten Fridays.
Welcome to Baddix. This is your co-host, Chris, as you know me. And I'm here with your main host, Shan. Say hello for the people.
What up, what up? Hello to the people. How's it going, Chris?
It's going the going as well, as the kids say.
Do they say that, Chris?
I say that.
You ain't young, my G. You're not young. Now, before I tell these cases, there is no doubt in any of our minds that these cases are riddled with accusations of racism and indifference, and to many, a lack of justice. And the one thing no one can deny is an extremely racist history in the areas these cases are set in. And I feel like as a biracial person, I have a certain perspective to where I can see both sides. I've literally lived my whole life with two different sides, and I've seen both of them fully, the good and the bad. Because of that, I can understand that as humans, we don't understand things unless they directly affect us. And especially in today's times, with everything that's going on, people's opinions seem to be a certain way until they have a new perspective and it affects them and their family. So the one thing we all can agree on as true crime lovers is a pattern of behavior. And basically, the fact that a pattern of behavior means the likelihood that this person or this thing is the suspect and/or is true. So what I would like to do is give you guys a pattern of behavior. And from there, we can all make up our own minds as to what is and isn't true. Is that all right?
Oh, I'm with that 100%.
All right, this is the case of Tamela Horsford and Alonzo Brooks. Now, there's no denying a racist history in these two cases. Other podcasts have covered the cases and took a deeper dive into that history, so I won't go into too much detail, but you should know a little history. In Tamela's case, in Forsyth County, it's a heavily white and conservative area, somewhere me and Chris don't want to go.
Probably not.
And its demographics are shaped by an event that happened in 1912, when white people forced out all 1,098 of Forsyth's black residents, who comprised about 10% of the population at the time. And forced out is putting it lightly. Now, Chris, before I begin, I want to give a trigger warning to all people of color listening because the one thing many don't understand is how upsetting this kind of stuff can be to hear. I mean, honestly, it's damn near traumatizing.
Yes.
We living today did not experience it, but knowing that because of who we are today, we would have had these same experiences then is traumatizing and infuriating. Would you agree?
It is.
There was a white woman who was murdered in 1912, and her name was May Crow. She was 18 years old, and she was found under very mysterious circumstances, beaten and bloody and unconscious in the woods. The case is still unsolved and will likely remain so since there are no more living witnesses. Yet at the time, the only young black men living in that part of the country were accused of the crime. A man named Rob Edwards was lynched almost immediately on the town square, and this turned out to be a lynching that most of the community participated in. Thousands of people showed up just to watch the lynching and joined in and fired bullets into his corpse. The county also lynched Oscar Daniel and Ernest Knox, both teenage boys. After that, white vigilantes drove every black person out of the county and enforced its borders as whites only well into the 1980s. Now, again, I want to say that we should all be mindful to the fact that they didn't just say, get out. Many black folks were hurt in this process, if not killed. And to think that this whites only lasted into the 80s lets us know why the population in this region is still predominantly white. Because let's be real, just because the sign was taken down doesn't mean the racism stopped, or we wouldn't still have racists today. In Alonzo's case, Kansas, although a free state, also holds a racist history, filled with many sundown towns. And if you don't know, a sundown town refers to an all-white town, municipality, or neighborhood in the United States that practice a form of racial segregation by excluding non-whites via some combination of discriminatory local law, intimidation, or violence. A known saying is, you best not be around here after dark. This is a sundown town. And if you are asking yourself how this is even possible, well, this is America, and that's how. Have you heard of sundown towns? I'm sure you have.
I'm just going to say right now, for anyone listening and you're like, well, how do you know, like, this stuff really goes on today? I can let you know now, you don't know unless you are someone of color that you can walk into a place and you feel it. You just know from the moment you walk in, you can feel the diverse eyes looking at you like, oh my God, like you're some sort of marvel. Like you're, you know what I mean? Like, and it just, it does make you feel ostracized from the whole situation. Like, bro, I just came here to chill, eat, just like you.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you've had an experience of being, of taking a travel to Colorado. And someone yelled a racial slur at you and our brother Malik, right?
They didn't even yell it. He scoffs it to a point where we can hear it. And it's like, okay. But then you hear around the town where people are just like, that's not us.
Yeah.
We do not condone that. We don't like that type of behavior. And it makes sense where, see, in these sundown towns, those voices are boosted up.
Yes.
If you are muffled out, then you were just that is the minority now. It's no longer the people of color or whatever you want to call it. But I will say, I've seen many cases here recently where the person would be saying something on camera. Next thing they know, boom, people are in front of their house and you have the cops escorting them now out of their house because of them breaking the law. These, the people who get a little wild, you know what I mean? Those videos are uplifting, I'm just saying.
I will say, yes, I also agree. There's plenty of people now, I will say white people, who are standing up and saying something instead of just letting it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I just seen a video the other day of a white woman that was driving by and seen three officers that had pulled over a black man. He was in his work uniform and everything. She pulled over and started recording them and was like, I'm just going to make sure everything's okay. And sure enough, they let him go they're just get out of here. Didn't even have anything to give him a ticket for, nothing. But had she not stopped, how differently could that situation have turned out?
We've seen how differently that situation could turn out.
So with that being said, speak up, people. Speak up. If you are not racist, you don't feel that way, you don't need to say that. We appreciate that, but speak up when you see it happening because you are a part of the difference that needs to be made.
Understand one thing. There is one race in this world. That is the human race. If you see another human being hurt, young, old, female, male, it don't matter. Speak up. Speak up. Speak up for them because some voices are muffled out. It's yes, so sad.
Exactly. The town of Beloit, I hope I'm saying that right, in north central Kansas, for example, responded to the news of incoming black homesteaders by passing a municipal ordinance that banned African Americans from living there and even threatened any travelers who might pass through on their way to settlements farther west. In December 1855, supporters of the anti-slavery Free State Party ratified Kansas' short-lived first constitution in Topeka, which included a 1,287-453 vote to ban free black people from the territory. From 1861 to 1927, Campney's research shows that Kansas mobs lynched at least 52 black men in cities from Wichita and Lawrence to Great Bend and Pittsburgh. That's a far cry from the hundreds of lives lost to lynching in the South, in the southern states, such as Georgia and Mississippi. But because of the relatively small percentage of African Americans living in Kansas at that time, it was a lot. And the list goes on and on. You get it. Racism.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that's just a little bit of the history from the two areas. Like I said, there's other podcasts that go into deep. That's not it, guys. Basically, that's not it. That is a couple examples that I pulled from hundreds. So if you want a deeper history of that, do your research. You can find it there. But I want to get into these cases. So with that little bit of history, Tamala Horsford was a mother of five children and a wife. She was a dedicated mother and a good friend. No one has ever had a single bad word to say about her from all the research I did. Tamala was born in St. Vincent and the Grenadines in 1978, where she lived until her family moved to the Bronx in 1989. She met her husband in Florida, who had a daughter from a previous relationship, and they went on to have five sons together. When Horsford died, her youngest son was only 4 years old. By all accounts, Tamala was the life of the party. She liked to laugh, to dance, and to have fun. Located about 40 miles northeast of Atlanta, Forsyth County is a primarily white suburban region in the Atlanta metropolitan area. A quintessential small southern town, everyone knows everyone in Cumming, and people seem to take care of their own. A little history on law enforcement in the area. Sheriff Ron Freeman and current FCSO Deputy Coroner Chris Shelton. In 2014, Shelton was forced to resign from a nearby police force after disturbing photos of himself posing with racist mammy dolls.
Okay. Your credentials is cut right there, my guy.
That's just not somebody you want in charge when you're black.
No, that's unfair. Do you see how messed up the system has been? I'm just saying. Real quick, Shan, because this is such a fact that some people don't even realize, but do you know how messed up things have been in this country to the point where me and Shan, opposed to others in this country who can be like, oh, well, I'm straight to, my grandparents came, my great-great-great-great-grandparents specifically came from Brazil, right? For us of this color, it is much harder for us to know where did I come from? Like, I don't know my previous culture. So in these situations where you're hearing these things, you are hearing about Americans. They were brought here forcibly, kept here. So it's like, this is their treatment after that. After such a traumatic thing, they're still being treated like they're from a different country, but they were brought here. Their kids are now from here. We don't know anything else. And unless you really do your research, you'll never find out where your ancestors came from. And that's a really messed up thing about this country that most don't actually even take into consideration. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Just small tangent.
Just 2 years later, he appeared in Facebook photos for Ron Freeman's 2016 campaign for sheriff. After Freeman won, Shelton was appointed deputy coroner for Forsyth County. According to social media posts, the Bloises are also friends with some of the individuals who were at the party, including Stacy and Tom Smith. Photos show the Smith and the DeBloises boating. DeBloises? I don't know how to say that. Out to dinner and celebrating birthdays with what Anna refers to as their friend family. These are all racist people, basically. Racist people in charge at that. And although Ken Jerrard told Rolling Stones they never worked on Tamala's case and would never treat a case differently because of who the person is, these types of connections make you wonder if any of this had a hand in the handling of Tamala's investigation. Because let's be real, even a racist will say, I'm not a racist.
Yes. I have black friends. Yeah. Why you gotta talk about their color, though? So you're noticing that. I'm sorry.
Tamala arrived at the slumber party at 10 p.m. on November 3, 2018. Attendees drank, watched football, and played Cards Against Humanity. There were also three men at the house, even though it was supposed to be an all-women sleepover. According to the witnesses, Horsford got up at 2 a.m. to go smoke a cigarette on the back porch. The next morning at 7:30 a.m., the homeowner's aunt found Horsford lying face down and motionless under the porch. At 8:59 a.m., Jose Barrera, the homeowner's boyfriend, called 911. In the 911 call, Barrera described Horsford as lying face down and not breathing. He brought attention to a small cut on her wrist, suggesting that it may have been self-inflicted. A woman's voice can also be heard on the call speculating that Tamala might have fallen from the balcony. The police arrived at 9:07 a.m. Now, if you are knowledgeable to the case, you know that there are many suspicious things surrounding this call to 911 and how things played out. For example, apparently the aunt saw Tamala, got on her knees and prayed, and then went to tell her niece. And I found that odd because if I see someone on the ground hurt, I immediately try to help them and call 911. But we will dive deeper into that a little bit later. The Forsyth County Sheriff's Office initially ruled Tamala's death an accident, concluding she fell from a second-story balcony. The autopsy uncovered a blood alcohol level of 0.23, nearly three times the legal driving limit in Georgia. Traces of Xanax and marijuana were also found, but according to people attending the party, as well as photos and videos taken from that night, Tamala didn't appear incoherent or sick at any point in that night. The last person to see Tamala was Bridget Fuller, who was picked up by her husband at 1:47. In her statement, Fuller says that Horsford was eating a bowl of gumbo and had said she planned to smoke a cigarette and head to bed. Over the next 10 minutes, the home security system registered the back door opening, closing, and then opening again for the last time at 1:57 a.m. The FSCO pointed to the toxicology report, which tested positive for THC and clocked her blood alcohol content at the 0.238, just shy of three times the legal limit to drive. With a BAC typically associated with blackouts, loss of coordination, and even vomiting, the FCSO determined that marijuana and alcohol use likely contributed to the fall. They also noted the door alarm log, as well as unlit cigarette and lighters Barrera said he found on the upper deck. Together, the investigators found that this evidence suggested, I just can't say that word today.
Suggested?
Yes, what is wrong with me? Suggested that Tamala went out for a cigarette sometime around 1:57 a.m. and accidentally fell to her death. According to the autopsy from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, Tamala showed blunt force trauma to her head, neck, torso, and extremities, including abrasions of the face, four types of hemorrhages in the skull and brain, dislocation of the right wrist, and cuts on her arms and legs. Additionally, she suffered a broken neck and lacerations of the right ventricle of the heart. According to the incident report written by lead investigator Mike Christian, Tamala's body position was also examined at the scene. Most notable, when Tamala was turned over, was the fact that she had come to rest face down. Her head had not been canted to one side or the other. Horsford's legs were found extended behind her, with both feet pointing to the right, and her right arm close to her body. Her left arm was found extended and bent at the elbow. That's a lot.
That is. Second story. How tall is this house?
I don't know.
Depending on how tall this house is, that's bullshit. You can't break all that from a second story.
I literally jumped off.
I was crazy as a youngin, so I know that you could survive some stuff like that. I would climb up to the roof, do some crazy stuff, tricks.
He really did, guys. I immediately thought of Chris when I was like reading that. I was like, that's a hell of a lot. Like, even like, what did it say? Some like it affected the heart. Like, damn.
Here recently, I have seen a man, I forget how far, have you seen the video of the guy who's like hanging off the balcony, getting away from the police, and he drops down and runs away?
Mm.
That was a big fall. Depending on how big this fall is, I think that's complete bullshit.
It's definitely a lot. And not to mention to kill you.
But I say that is a hell of a cover-up story, and the fact that you could be like, oh, well, she fell.
Right.
Hell of a cover-up story.
I feel like this manner of death is what has her family and friends so what the fuck about it. Like, come on. Especially when you look at all the videos where it seems like she wasn't even that fucked up. And you have witnesses saying she wasn't even that fucked up. You had the lady that left right before she went outside and was eating. She was eating gumbo. She was chilling. She was fine.
Guys, COVID has taught me anything. It is best to have a party of about four, maybe five people. Let's quit the party and let's just, bad things happen at parties. Bad things happen when you have too many people around, getting drunk, getting wild, I don't understand it. People just get ridiculous.
The next case happens at a party.
Oh my God.
The scene was never secured. And at least one witness, pretrial officer Barrera, told investigators he touched the body. Remember, that's the boyfriend of the homeowner. Saying he moved Tamela's leg while trying to figure out if she was still alive. Barrera also said in his interview he found and moved the unlit cigarette and lighter on the deck before he saw the body. But because police believed the death to be an accident, no evidence was ever fingerprinted. Crime scene photos were never taken, and though Barrera states on the original 911 call that security cameras were installed and pointed at the backyard, the batteries were found to be dead and the cameras were not recording. During the autopsy, neither a sexual assault kit nor fingernail clippings were collected. Now, I also want to mention that on the 911 call, Barrera says, "We have cameras. We will check them." No one ever tells them, "No, don't do that, that an officer will do that," or anything like that, which I found suspicious. But bigger than that, how were crime scene photos not taken? That, to me, was baffling. Like, what? How are fingernail clippings not taken? Suicide or not, you take photos to document your findings. There has been a variety of inconsistencies throughout the investigation and GBI reports regarding the case, including conflicting witness statements, a tampered crime scene, mishandled evidence, and an unheard-of absence of autopsy photos, and many other alarming factors.
This is a sickening misuse of power, which, again, has been prevalent in this country for God knows how long.
I'm going to ask you something, Chris, and I want you to answer truthfully. I'm going to say a statement, and I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. I can't speak for everyone. This is just my opinion.
Okay.
But as a Black person, would you say that for the most part, you know that you're never going to get the fair shake or the same shake as someone else? Like, is it shocking that they did not handle her investigation like they would have a white woman? Because I know that I would, this is expected. Would you agree that Black people, we expect this treatment?
We do.
We know that this is how it is.
We do, but I will say for the most of us, though, we don't, at least for me personally, I don't like to just think that this is how it's always going to be. Like, sometimes I do like to allow my mind to be hopeful and be like, oh, but, you know, like, people evolve, people change. Hopefully people will start to see me more as a human and get away from, because this mindset here, guys, this stuff here still sees people of color as property. How they originally came into this world.
Or as less than.
Yes, or as less than. Not even a full human, not even a full person. That doesn't make sense.
But it's just crazy to me because, like, that's what the Black Lives Matter protests are about, is the fact that in police brutality, Black people are not treated equal. But in our investigations, we're not treated equal. When a mother calls and says, my kid, who is Black, has been hurt, what's the running joke that ambulances get to certain neighborhoods much slower than mm-hmm. they do other neighborhoods and things like that, you
and
know?
Do you know the funny thing about that is police sometimes will even get there faster than an ambulance. And the first thing police do is they start really going into yeah. like the suspects, and really it could have been an ambulance call. Like, this is an emergency. I have to get mm-hmm. like in, then the police come out. And it's like,
I mean, we've had the talk before where as Black people, if your loved one is suffering with mental illness or something like that, you don't want to call the police.
You don't
at all. That is a terrifying thought, that you're better off dealing with it yourself than risking calling the police.
You sometimes don't even want to call the hospital or even have them hospitalized just because of a fear of what could happen to them. Mm-hmm. It's really sad that that's something that's on our minds, or something that could even be reasonable to us.
But it's like, backed behind experience.
But even more sad is that most kids, even like my nieces, I'll hear Allie every now and again make a joke or reference about like the police and, you know, like, you know, like something smart like that, but it's like,
so
why
known.
Do you have that? Like,
right, it's so known.
Like, you should feel safe around them. You should
know
feel
what I
like
mean?
You can depend on them. But here we have something to where, like, we should get the full fair share. It reminds you of, like, earlier stuff where you had to have, like, now they make it to, even in the Constitution, which you couldn't really read in the, you know, like, in your rights, things that you could have is, like, representation. Mm-hmm. A court of your peers. We you know, you hardly get that. You hardly get a jury that's of your, back in those days, you wouldn't get a jury of your peers, people that know you from your neighborhood.
Right. A great example of that is Rodney Reed. He continues to be rejected by the same judge that convicted him a long ass time ago and was racist. Let's be real. Like, come on. And yet he can't get a new trial. He can't get a trial somewhere else. He keeps getting the same one. And how that's legal is beyond me, because you're right. It's our constitutional right. And yet his right somehow is less.
You know what? What's interesting, something I'm going to actually look into, is because most times you'll have cops patrol neighborhoods that they have never, like, even, you never grew up there. You didn't live here in this neighborhood. But you'll never have cops who grew up in that neighborhood patrolling an area that's super duper nice. You'll never have that. I want to look that up just so I can get a full statistic. So before y'all beat me in the head, just, I'm going to look it up. I'm going to research it, but I'm sure. I am willing to bet my pinky toe on this, because I feel like that's facts, because I know several times you'll hear these stories and it's like, of course he couldn't sympathize with these people because he's taken their humanity away from them. They're not human to him. He's not perceiving this. And when we hear these cases where people are like doing something horrible to people, it's because you have taken away their humanity. You're not looking at this as, oh, well, I'm a human as well. And if I hurt this person, how would that make me feel if I got hurt the same way? You're not thinking like that, because you have taken away that and now you've made them something different.
I read in some places more than 2 hours elapsed before 911 was called, but that was never confirmed. Tamla's body allegedly showed signs of blunt force trauma that looked consistent with a brutal beating. After nearly 4 months, the family had yet to receive an official autopsy report from the Forsyth County Coroner. The story even appeared to be kept out of the public eye, with almost no media coverage at all. Ferreira was fired from his position as pretrial officer on December 20th after he used his position to gain access to confidential files in Tamla's investigation, a case in which he was a witness. Ferreira also assessed the personal file of at least 5 other unnamed people. When Michelle Graves, a close friend of Tamla's, pressed the party attendees about her friend's death, they attempted to intimidate her, even having her arrested, and to the point of them even suing her. So I'm just going to come out with it and say, and I don't want to say too much because they like to sue people, but typical. No, but I do want to say, the behavior is just suspicious. It's very suspicious. Why are you looking at, like, come on.
Can you face me in a sensible court if we're gonna go there? Because in a sensible court, has anyone here seen I know you have, Shan, I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Mm-hmm.
Because these are very much the tendencies you see in that movie. After they murder this person, how they're, like, some are sitting there trying to intimidate, like, you better not. You better not say anything.
Yep.
Some are trying to cover up. Like, going back to the crime scene, they always go back to the crime scene, go back to crime stuff. It's funny that, you know, he's fired because he's tampering with evidence, which shows why you tamper with evidence if there's nothing that you don't want to be seen.
Right.
And this is staying out of the media for a while, as if certain people don't want this to be seen. Like, he's a part of the law enforcement.
And then you add in the ties that the families apparently have with people in law enforcement and things like that. It just seems like, you know, one of the things I read from one of the officers on the investigation was, oh, he just got curiosity. If he was black, would he have been treated the same? Would it just be curiosity?
No.
You know what I mean? And that's where I think that the reality sets in. Now, I want to mention that with the marijuana being found in her system, a lot of the attendees made many statements that she was the only one that smoked, and really harped on it over and over. And Chris, come on, we both know you don't smoke at someone else's house unless they are okay with it. So they can save that bullshit for the birds. And with the Xanax, she was not prescribed the drug, and her husband says she didn't take Xanax regularly. So I'm interested to know how that got into her system. Either way, a night of drinking and smoking pot should not make you end up dead.
I have a few questions, though. I forgot about the husband. Why is he not here at this party?
Because it was supposed to be an all-girls
party. This is ridiculous.
So why were those dudes there? Yeah.
You know what really gets me about these times when things like this happen? Bro, would you have pulled this if the husband was there?
Probably.
It's so messed up. Earlier, you mentioned that the cigarette was unlit. The cigarette which she mentioned she was going to go smoke, it was unlit.
And there were cigarettes left out there.
From her, or, I mean...
Well, you'll see when we come in, I'm going to say it later, but basically there was two different kinds of cigarettes. So it wasn't even...
It's not even hers. It's
exactly.
Not even hers.
And I say that later. No, if you were a smoker, which, like I said, I used to be, you don't smoke anything other than what you smoke unless someone gives you
exactly
a cigarette.
Like you're out. And what is the cigarette doing placed there, unlit, as if somebody didn't even fully think this out? Like, this isn't even thought out. Like, you didn't even take a few puffs off of it to make it look like, you know, like, I'm gonna just place this here. You hear this in crime scenes where, like, especially, sad to say, but in police brutalities, where sometimes they're adding certain things to the crime scene to make it look like, to really criminalize this person.
Victim shame or whatever, yeah.
And drugs in the city. You don't smoke marijuana, especially if you know that this person is parole officer. Anytime you
right.
hear officer,
right.
no, I'm not smoking there. I'm not.
Like,
I'm
think
not
what you want if you're ignorant and you think Black people are whatever. But I can tell you right now, we have sense in our brains. We do not go to people. First of all, not all Black people smoke weed. But ones that do anyone that smokes weed. I don't care if you're Black, white, Hispanic. I don't care. If you smoke weed, you do not go do it at someone's house that isn't okay with it. Why? Because you know they'll call the cops on you.
And you already have asked. You already know. Like,
you already know.
You knew ahead of time. Like, I've already kind of felt.
To feel comfortable enough to keep going outside. There were other people smoking that night, too. Bullshit. I call bullshit.
And let's remember here, people, given like, this is the sick thing about this society. This is really showing the sickness in this society. Notice that, you know, she's able to go to this sleepover, right? With no malice, even with the history in this country, no malice. She has no malice. She's just looking at this like, this is a normal thing. I can party with you guys. Have fun. I'm not seeing any difference.
Right.
Why are y'all?
Right.
Why are we able to forgive y'all for all the sickness, everything that I can look up in my history? This is my history. This is a part of my history. Why are y'all still holding on to this? Like, bro, you brought these people here.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is, and that's what Shannon was saying earlier. Like, we know, like, we've seen both sides. I know that both sides have their struggles. Like, both sides go through normal life shit. It makes no sense to think that we're different. It makes no sense to harp on that because we're not.
And we also see that not every white person is racist. That is very clear. Shout out to Bernie Sanders. We love you. We love to see it. But, you know, the truth of the matter is we know that not every white person is racist. The problem is that what I've noticed, even with our mother, is that there's this defensive mode that occurs. When you try to talk about these things or point out, there could be a clear racist in the room, but a lot of white people do get very defensive. Mom has. And I'm like, no one thinks that you were on the porch whipping me. I don't think that. I don't think that you stood up there and whipped me. What I'm telling you is that throughout since then, these things have trickled down. And now we live in a society where where the institutionalized racism is just continuous. And your help is needed to fix it. Your understanding of it.
You are a voice of that time. You can speak from the time that
you
grew up in.
Of your ancestors.
Yeah,
of your ancestors. But that's not what we're talking
about.
No one's talking about that. And I think that's where the message gets lost in the sauce. What we're talking about are the effects of now, the effects that now we fear our brothers going out into the streets because if a police officer stops him, the institutionalized racism will get to him in the systems.
Yeah, because growing up here in Texas, I'll tell you this, as a youngin', he used to like walk the streets here in the small town I live in. It was like anytime I saw like a truck or anything like that, like you just... It's built in your mind like something can happen.
Yeah,
I can just be thrown in these woods for no reason.
Look, check this out. I'm about to blast Hutto, but you went to Hutto High School, and you have told me before that it was the teacher, right? Or was students?
No, that was Marble Falls.
That was Marble Falls. Okay,
that was Marble Falls.
Well,
I am
Marble
a
Falls.
Young. I'm a young 11-year-old boy.
And what happened?
I'm being called the N-word is being used multiple times. And I actually went to a teacher thinking that, you know, like maybe, you know, he'll take some seriousness into this, because this is my first time ever experiencing this. Growing up with a Caucasian mother, a white mother, she would constantly try
sheltered
to
shelter from it.
Yeah. Try to, you know, like make it like you're not different. There's no difference. You know, color right. is meaningless. And so it always was to me. But the moment that word was used, it's guys, because I've heard people be like, well, y'all still like it's still used. It's the difference. It's yes. like if it's aimed like a weapon and it's meant to hurt.
Yeah,
that is different. You are now taking this word and you are using it against the person based upon what you know. Yep. And what you know is that this word has worked a lot of times to provoke these people to
it's
either
meant to anger, be malicious. Yeah.
And it's cruel. It's just, it's wrong. And the fact that that teacher then looked at me and was like, it's nothing. It's just boys being boys, and made it like it was nothing. They got nothing. There was no punishment. Whereas in my mind, like, well, so what was I supposed to do?
And like, what's sad about this is you faced that at 11.
Yeah.
And then later in your life, went to Colorado and heard it again.
And it's not even just that. There are other things throughout life. I'm sure many of us have heard.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
the
here's the one for me. You're pretty for a black girl.
Oh, that's so sick.
Gotta love that one, you know, because I couldn't be pretty for a human. I'm only pretty for a black girl.
You're just pretty. Like, you're just pretty. There's no
like lucky you, you know.
Wow. There's the go back to Africa, which again, this one is really funny because it's like, bro, if you can show me where I'm from. In Africa, maybe I'll consider it. But until then, how about since you said your family's from Normandy? I mean, you can go back. I mean, you know. So I'm just saying, how about because we are all immigrants in this country. I am sorry, but
literally.
I am sorry to say it, but and we can remain ignorant to it. And this is something Shan said earlier, and I'm just going to touch back on this. Because it is like this when, you know, you talk to the older generation and they refuse to take any new knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to remain ignorant to what we were taught, and I'm going to remain ignorant to the things that I saw, which is I wasn't being racist. People around me weren't being racist.
Right.
But I mean, it was still happening.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if it was happening.
And you are in a place of being down the line. It's your ancestors. So unfortunately, they left this to you to fix. That's
yes.
truthfully what it comes down to. It is all of our responsibilities to make a better world
yeah.
for these kids going forward. And so that's what it really comes down to. I say it again. I don't think that Tanya of today's time was whipping me with a whip.
Exactly. I
you
don't
know,
at
like
all.
That's not. I think that defensiveness is
mm-hmm.
what needs to be noticed so that we can stop being defensive. We know that not every white person is racist. We know it. We know that. We love white people. I love white people. Half of my family is white.
Yes, exactly. What I will say is, though, my niece, like, it is amazing to see that, you know, like, when you see her grandfather and then you see her, it truly shows that humans, like, we're just all the same. Like, literally, you can, but again, if you are ignorant and you refuse to take on new knowledge,
right.
then you'll see that and still be like, but she still had black in her.
Yes. If you've never seen my daughters, you can check out my Instagram, ShareBear32. But yeah, I mean, it's true. My youngest, she has blonde hair, blue eyes, some days green eyes, but she was very light complected and literally her own grandfather. So that's my dad, her mother's dad. That's not far up the line. That's not three, four people. That's literally two people up from her is black, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it does. The point of that is that we're fucking humans.
Exactly.
That's it. That's it.
Exactly. It's really hard for people to understand though. And I also, you know, there is another lie in that. And it just got, you know, shown to me in what you said that her grandfather is full, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lie that is told, and we really have to like address it now so that, you know, we can get past this is that, oh, well, why are y'all bringing that up? Slavery is so far.
Right,
we're
right.
so far away from
and
that.
It really wasn't. It was a great grandma away.
Yeah, our grandmother was picking cotton.
Literally.
Our grandmother, like, that's literally our, just one generation detached. You know what I mean?
Literally.
Like, so it's really not, guys. It's really not. We're not that far away from Martin Luther King Jr. and everything that happened there. If you have not seen the movie Selma, that was the first time I ever cried in a theater. I was broken watching police beat down those people. It just sickened me. And it wasn't because of their color or anything like that. I just started seeing people I love, multiple colors of the people I love. Mm-hmm. And if that was them, because there were white people in the march too.
Yeah.
And that's how we
shout out Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Yes, you should.
The hero we all needed.
Why couldn't you just be our president, Bernie?
Gosh, I'm a Bernie for president every year that it goes, even when he's long gone.
Bernie, I'm not even going to lie. I kind of wrote your name on the ballot this year. I know they didn't take it, I think, because I put the second choice of Biden there. You know what I mean? But
you know, by default, of course.
By default.
It was you originally, but you never got your shot in the primaries. Speaking of that, people, educate yourself. Vote in the primaries, people.
Yes.
Vote in the primaries before the actual election. We are not taught these things on purpose. You need to vote in the primaries. Also, if you live in Texas, next year we are getting Greg Abbott's ass out of there. Abbott out.
Yeah, I'm with that. Another thing, again, like she said, educate yourself, because something that the older generation also had, which was, I think, really bad, is this need to be Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, fuck all that.
Yeah, if he's
good. Let's just be right. Let's just be good. Let's just do what's best. So continuing on, Jean's boyfriend, Jose, hung out in the basement watching the football game with Tom. The husband, is it Jean? Or it's J-E-A-N-N-E.
J-E-A-N-N-E.
Jean. I don't know, fuck her. Jean's boyfriend, Jose, hung out in the basement watching the football game with Tom, the husband of Stacy, another partygoer. At halftime, Jean said the two men came upstairs and mingled. The guests began to trickle in at 7 p.m. And at around 8:30 p.m., Tamela arrived. Interviews with police indicated that many of the partygoers had never met Tamela before, but Jean knew her because their sons played football together. Tamela brought a bottle of Coraleo tequila. I know people are probably
like, we don't
like,
drink
wow.
like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know people are probably like, wow.
You can tell we don't.
it was a present for Jean's birthday, but she ended up drinking it herself because Jean told her she wasn't a tequila drinker. And honestly, they have interviews of this dumb bitch talking about this, and you can just tell, like, she's got, like, her nose up. She's like, I don't drink that. Like, so I didn't drink it. Like, who does that? You're a stuck-up bitch. Tamela was especially social, and several of the other partygoers noted how talkative and friendly she was. Paula, who arrived after everyone else, later told police that Tam was in a great mood. She was dancing, and she was talking to everybody. She engaged with everybody. She had that kind of a personality. Tamela talked about her family often and with great pride. At one point in the night, she FaceTimed her stepdaughter, who was expecting a child, and expressed considerable excitement about the arrival of the new baby. Throughout the night, the partygoers told police Tamela went out onto Jean's first floor deck to smoke cigarettes and marijuana. Many of the women consumed quite a bit of alcohol that night, and Tamela was one of them. As the evening wound down, some of the women headed home or were picked up by rides, while others went to bed in various rooms of Jean's house. Tamela had planned to stay overnight and sleep in Jean's son's room, but she was keen to hang out and socialize even more. Shortly before 2 a.m., one of the partygoers named Bridget was picked up by her husband. Bridget told police that Tamela saw her off and was left eating that bowl of gumbo. And she was actually the last one awake in the house, apparently. And honestly, like, with all that, that sounds like totally normal to me. Like, of course you're going to get drunk. You're a mother of five. You mm-hmm. have a night away, and you're planning to stay the night.
Though,
that's safe partying.
As soon as you saw that there were men there, me, I would have pulled out. As a woman, as just a male, if I saw there was a change in plans, well, I got to get the hell out of here now. I really do. I really do. I don't like feeling outnumbered. I really like just in any
sense. But I also think she would have felt like this is her boyfriend.
Again, yeah, because you can feel like this is safe.
So Jean's home security system was hooked up to send notifications to her cell phone every time a door opened or closed in the house. The list of notifications provided the police and included in the case file tells its own tragic story. It shows the back door was opened at 1:49, then closed at 1:50, then opened again at 1:57, but never closed, which I found odd. How would she open the door, then closed it, and then opened it again, and then turned around and fell off the patio? Doesn't opening the door mean she was heading inside, or does it mean someone came outside with her and left the door open for a reason?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, she opened the door, closed it. That to me says she's smoking a cigarette. Then it's 7 minutes until it's opened again. So you mean to tell me she turned around to walk inside, opened the door, and somehow fell on her face at that? Because if she fell backwards, she should be backwards.
Yeah, that would be a whole backflip situation.
That's impossible. The part that doesn't make sense to me, the door. Why was the door left open?
I have another thing, which is ringing true. She's the last one. She's the only one up right now.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't her house. This is a random stranger's house. I'm not walking around your place.
Exactly.
I don't feel comfortable like that.
Exactly.
You're not just going to, no, I'm going to go to sleep right now.
Especially as a black person in a white person's house. You know that. You know that they're going to blame you first for anything that happened.
For something coming up missing, anything like
anything.
That. Oh, she stole. What? I didn't. I was straight sleep. And see, that's exactly why I would be straight sleeping. I know someone was up, bro. They were up with her. That's so ridiculous.
I think she fell off, but I think someone came on that patio, pushed her off, and walked back inside and left the door open.
But she wouldn't have died, so they beat her.
Maybe they beat her and then threw her off.
Because of the bludgeon force to the head shows me that she wasn't dead. But if you push me off, I can talk now. And leaving me alive means that I'm going to talk. It means that you're going to be caught. There's no way that my living testimony... And this is like that one. You remember she was, man, I wish I remember her name, but they don't talk about her enough, honestly. The one in her car, she goes to the police station and dies in there, in the cell.
Oh, Sandra Bland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for that. Again, that's one of those ones where she was living. You would have had a living testimony. But
and another one of those ones where they've got every reason in the book for how they had nothing to do with it, yet it's still suspicious as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, the aunt got up around 7:30 a.m. and went to make coffee, and that's when she saw the disturbing sight from the basement window. She told police, "I was just staring out the window, and I saw those Dalmatian pajamas, so I didn't start the coffee. I got on my knees and said a prayer, and then I ran upstairs." Madeline woke up Jean and Jose, who came outside and found Tamela lying face down in the backyard at 8:59 a.m. And apparently she called 911 and then gave the phone to her boyfriend, Barrera. Here's a piece of the transcript from that call. This is Jean. "We had people over last night. We were drinking. Most of us went to bed. One of them stayed on the balcony. She was drinking. And we just went outside and she's laying face down in the backyard. It looks like maybe. I'm guessing she fell off the balcony, but she's stiff. The dispatcher said, okay, is she breathing? Jean said, I don't know, but she's face down. At this point, Jean became distressed and passed the phone to her boyfriend, Jose. Jose said, she's not moving one bit. She is not breathing. She's completely face down in the yard. She is stiff. I just want to stop and say, like, if that girl was her friend, she clearly cares about her nothing.
Nothing.
Can you imagine seeing your dead friend? You're just like, oh my God, this girl. Yeah, she was over here. We were all drinking, but she's the only one. She didn't even address her name. She's just like, oh yeah, one of us, or we all went to bed. One of them stayed on the balcony. You mean Tamela, your friend that you invited to this party?
Wow.
The Forsyth County Sheriff's Office and Coroner's Office were dispatched to the scene, and Tamela was formally pronounced dead at 10:47 a.m. In a supplemental incident report, the lead investigator on the case, Detective Michael Christian, described the scene as he discovered it. Tamela was located in the backyard in a prone position. She was laying with her head away from the residence and her feet toward the residence. Her left arm was at an approximate 40-degree angle from her body, and the forearm and hand were bent further toward her head in approximately the 10 o'clock position. Her right arm was straight and by her side, with the hand approximately 6 inches from the leg. Her legs were straight behind her, with both feet pointing to the right. Tamala was clad in a one-piece pajama outfit consisting of a white fleece hooded outfit with dog paw prints on it and a set of ears affixed to the hood. Tamala's body was sketched and measured. Additionally, the height of the main level porch was noted as well as the height of the rail. With the permission of Deputy Coroner Bowen, Tamala was turned over. Most notable when Tamala was turned over was the fact she had come to rest face down. Her head had not been canted to one side or the other. Tamala's right wrist was fractured or dislocated. There was a large bump where her wrist met her hand, as well as a cut over the bump, as if the bone had cut the skin from the inside. There were matching defects on both of Tamala's shins. These corresponded with a piece of metal landscape edging which stood up approximately 1 inch from the surrounding ground. Other than the broken wrist and cuts on her shin, no obvious signs of injury presented themselves. 2 days later, on November 6th, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation's Associate Medical Examiner, Andrew Kompminers, performed an autopsy on Tamala. That autopsy report was finalized on February 5th, 2019, and 2 weeks later, Forsyth County Sheriff's Office officially closed their investigation into Tamala's death. The case was opened recently due to the public scrutiny following the George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery case, but it was closed again, listed as a tragic accident. Some notable and questionable things in the case are, for one, the handling of the investigation. It is made clear that they did not handle this case the way they should have and brings to question why. Could it have been the connections or just a lack of seeing Tamala as worthy of proper investigation? Then the Jose guy looking into the case. That's just suspicious as fuck. The extensive injuries on Tamala's body and the fact that her body looked to have been moved or tampered with, and even Jose admitting to moving one of her limbs. The inconsistent statements that people in the home made as to what happened, and biggest for me is the handling of this woman's life. And what I mean is the lady that hosted the party was supposed to be Tamala's friend. You find your friend dead and you don't want to try to help her. Not to mention, there are recorded interviews done at their house when she walks in and is bribing the officers with gift cards and says, "Are you almost finished here? I need to get ready for this funeral." Just heartless and weird, and the police handling of this case should damn near be criminal. Do we do interviews at people's house and let them walk in and out? And if you remember, everyone kept saying in their interviews Tamala was the only smoker that night. Yet there were two different brands of cigarettes found, which of course was never DNA tested. And I used to smoke cigarettes, and if you're the only smoker, you would only be smoking the brand you smoke, unless another smoker offered you a cigarette. So just another strange, inconsistent statement.
100% true. 100% true. There are a lot of inconsistencies in this case.
It reminds me of the case of Kendrick Johnson. Just so many weird inconsistencies, things that don't make sense, but it's never investigated properly. So even if it is an accident, it almost makes you feel like it's something else, because why wasn't it just done properly?
Was everyone drug tested at the party, by the way?
No, of course not.
To test that there were anyone else taking Xanax or anything
no,
like that?
No, of course not, Chris. Because why would they treat poor white people like they were a suspect?
Because you could be. People don't just fall off of rails. It doesn't happen. You do not just whoosh. She had 5 kids and a husband.
You know, and like I said, even if it was an accident, it's the handling of it that makes it suspicious, that makes us question too many times.
Not going through all the steps.
Right. Too many times, time and time again. Black people, brown people, indigenous people have been ignored. So you can't be mad when they question if things are done when you're not doing things properly.
And you haven't before. It's like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, but I can't. Sorry, guys.
I didn't even touch on everything, but I want to continue our pattern of behavior. So I will encourage you guys to catch us on next week's episode of Forgotten Fridays. We will go into part two of this episode and talk about the Alonzo Brooks case, a case that actually happened a long ass time ago, but of course never got the attention it deserved. Due to a new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries episode, it is now being reopened and finally getting that attention. So I want to talk about it, and I want to talk about how it relates to Tamala's case in so many ways. So make sure you catch us on next week's episode. And then, of course, catch us on Instagram, Two Bad X Podcast. Bye, guys.